This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service is working to address PEDV, porcine delta coronavirus, and other swine enteric coronavirus diseases by requiring disease reporting and development of herd management plans that indicate the producer is taking actions to implement biosecurity steps to reduce further spread of the disease. APHIS will provide subsidized funding for biosecurity actions described in herd plans. Other work to fight the diseases that may be reimbursable includes lab testing fees for samples, continued monitoring of pigs after sampling, livestock vehicle washing, and the use of disinfectants to clean the premises. National Pork Board Science and Technology Vice President Dr. Paul Sundberg says continued monitoring of farms through submissions to the veterinary diagnostic laboratories is important and will be paid for by USDA at this point. If producers plan to take advantage of these funds, Sundberg says they should work with their herd veterinarian to ensure their herd management plan indicates they have the required protocols in place before they fill out the paperwork and submit it to USDA. The EPA bid to vastly expand its U.S. waters jurisdiction took another hit in the U.S. House when a key committee voted to put the proposed rule on hold. The House Transportation Committee said no to EPA's Waters of the U.S. rule. Some Democrats dissented over clean drinking water, sport fishing, and other concerns, but Republicans and a majority of Democrats said no to what many in agriculture consider a massive EPA land grab. Top committee Democrat Nick Joe Rall of West Virginia.
Mr. Chairman, if it's not clear yet, it should be, that in the district I'm honored to represent, the worst three letters of the alphabet that can be stated are EPA.
Rawl says they spell fear, reinforced by the latest proposed rule.
They amount to an expansion of EPA's reach into waters that never before envisioned by the Congress to be subject to the Clean Water Act. This new rule, intended to calm the waters, so to speak, has instead whipped up yet another political firestorm, scaring the heck out of our farmers and businesses already struggling to deal with heaps of government regulations to earn a living.
Even now, Rawl says some of his farmers wonder when the EPA will swoop down and cite their puddles for Clean Water Act violations. Sponsor of the bill to block the rule and force EPA to work with state and local officials, Florida's Steve Sutherland.
The EPA and the Corps of Engineers are engaged in a brazen effort to upset a successful federal-state partnership that has regulated America's waters for more than 40 years. The basis for this partnership is a mutual understanding that not all waters are subject to federal jurisdiction, that states have the primary responsibility for regulating waters within their own boundaries.
A balance reaffirmed twice, Sutherland says, by the Supreme Court. Sutherland's bill, headed to the full House, forces EPA to work with the states on future water rules and would halt EPA's separate interpretive rule to limit exemptions for some ag conservation practices. The House has already passed an anti-Waters of the U.S. rider on an energy and water spending bill. Yesterday, Springfield Plastics Incorporated, in conjunction with Agricultural Drainage Management Coalition, hosted a conservation drainage field day at their facility in Auburn. I had the chance to catch up with Steve Baker, president of Springfield Plastics Incorporated.
The purpose for today is to show people the conservation drainage systems that are being developed. Some of them are further along than others. We want them to be able to come out here and literally kick the tires on these projects. Most of them are projects that are not visible from the road. You have to actually get out and look around to see what's happening with the water flow, what's happening to the nutrient discharge on these systems. So it really needs something where somebody needs to get out and kick the tires on them rather than sit in the office or sit on TV and watch it.
And we're standing in the midst of one of those systems right now. We are at a saturated buffer strip right now. And tell us what everyone would expect to see when they come out here. Describe this zone.
Okay, a saturated buffer system, and as you alluded to, we are standing right on top of it right now. To give you kind of a picture in your mind, most of you have probably seen a buffer strip along the edge of a stream. At this time of year, there's a vegetation and about 3 to 4 foot tall, very thick. This year, with all the moisture, we've had a lot of green vegetation. And what we've done here is we've taken a tile line that ran underneath this buffer strip, and we intercepted that tile line and put a structure in to stop the water from there. And then we diverted the water parallel to the stream. And then we have the water moving its way back through the buffer strip on into the stream. The whole goal is this buffer strip with all this vegetation can do some work for us, and it can remove nutrients, and particularly nitrogen. And what we've our prior results have been on this system is by time the water moves through the system into the stream, we've removed 90-95% of the nitrogen. So our initial results were very good. We've now installed 15 of these across the Midwest. Two of them are here in Auburn, the one we're standing on and a different one. And so we're very excited about what we've seen so far out of these systems. As we go forward, we'll collect the data for the next couple years, and then hopefully in another year, maybe 2 years after that, we'll see USDA step in and write a cost share standard for it where they'll actually fund the development of these projects. USDA is involved in the research side of it through the Conservation Innovation Grant. So yes, they are very active in this. They've had numerous individuals out here today looking at the system, both from the field tech folks all the way to the very top levels of the state of Illinois.
And obviously, nutrient management has become very important in this country. We can all look at the Chesapeake Bay region for an example of that. And now state-by-state plans are going out to try to control the hypoxia region in the Gulf. Are you hoping to see conservation systems that you are displaying here today become more prevalent to try to combat nutrient management issues?
That is, nutrient reduction is high on our mind for our drainage systems. We all know what drainage does for yield. You cannot farm in today's environment without drainage pipe. You cannot raise 300 bushel corn. It just does not happen without good drainage. But what we're adding to the systems is this nutrient reduction to make the systems even better. We want it to be a win-win for both the producer and the environment. The systems we've got being shown today basically do not take any land out of production, and they're easy to manage. We believe that is a real selling point to these systems, because that way the farmer does not have to monitor it every 10 minutes to manage the system, and he gets to use his drainage system for a yield increase. So it's just making his drainage system work better, going to be more responsible in our activities and not let the nitrogen leave. We do think, and the Iowa nutrient reduction strategy is almost final, and many of these practices that we are showing here today are already in that nutrient reduction strategy. Illinois is about to come with one, and I suspect that we'll see those same things in the Illinois strategy.
With these saturated buffer systems, have you noticed a difference in the nutrient pickup in terms of the vegetation that is on it?
No, we do not test that. What we do is we test the amount of nitrogen at different stages of the buffer. And by time we get out near the stream, which is where it enters a public water source, we're showing very, very little nitrogen remaining.
As more and more strict nutrient management plans are passed, systems that reduce the loss of nutrients from surrounding land are being very closely watched. President of Springfield Plastics Incorporated, Steve Baker.
Yes, in certain areas, we don't have it quite as prevalent in the Midwest, but in certain areas, the challenges under the Clean Water Act have been very serious. The challenges under discharge permits have been very serious. So it is something that we in agriculture have to have our eyes open to improve.
Something else that you were talking about today was bioreactors. Do you want to go over bioreactors real quick?
Bioreactors, to the layman, is nothing more than a big hole in the ground with lots of wood chips in it. Now, we do design it and put pipes in there, but basically what happens is we put water in one end of the hole and take water out the other end, and there's organisms in those wood chips that love nitrogen. And so this is a practice that's been researched now for about 7 or 8 years, 10 years maybe, and it now is fully funded cost shared by USDA and RCS. So this is a practice that if, from a farmer standpoint, they need to be going into their local office and talking about bioreactors, or go visit one and look at it and see what's involved. Bioreactors is also a practice that requires little or no management. It takes no land out of production. Some bioreactors, now they're farming right over top of them. So it's a practice that has great potential. The nitrogen reduction on a bioreactor is significant. We've seen as high as 90% before, but 40% is not uncommon. So bioreactors is definitely a practice that all farmers need to think about and look to see where it can be applied and where it can't be.
Now, currently within the state, do you know how prevalent these systems are on farms, saturated buffer strips or the bioreactors? Do you know how many there are in the state that are currently working?
The saturated buffers is a brand new concept, so I'm only aware of 16 saturated buffers in the Midwest. All of those are being monitored for water quality and flow data, so there's not many of those. Now, bioreactors is a different story. Those have been around a long time. The University of Illinois has done extensive research on those, and those are being installed much more actively now that they've got out of the research phase of that, and the engineering side is pretty solid on it now.
And in terms of addressing the agriculture community, farmers around the state, is there anything you'd like to say to them on maybe why they should really start paying attention to all of this stuff? Not that they aren't already, but maybe paying even more attention than they already are.
Well, we just don't know where we're going to go from a regulatory environment. We hope that it stays voluntary. But I think that we all have to, and I think all farmers are this, be good stewards. They want to protect their land. They don't want to spend any more on nitrogen than they have to. They do not want to spend through a nitrogen tax that would be put on by somebody because they think we need to clean the water up. So I think that we just being good stewards, none of us want to put extra nitrogen on our neighbor. So I would, if I was farmers, I would be looking at those. I would have all of my systems evaluated to see what practices will work and what ones won't work.
Steve Baker invited anyone who was unable to attend their field day but still wanted to take a look at the conservation practices to get in contact and set up a personal tour. Those interested can call 217-438-6167 or send an email to Steve Baker at sbaker@spipipe.com. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besch. Thanks for tuning in.